Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Shop Talk Show. This week's show is brought to you by two sponsors. One is the CSS Summit. Literally go to csssummit.com. It is Environments for Humans' big event of the summer. It is July 23rd through 25th. So coming up real quick at it, Dave will be there speaking about CSS. It's 3 full days, an online conference all about CSS. The coupon code SHOPTALK will save you 20% off of that. So we'll tell you a little bit more about who's going to be there and how that goes later on in the show, and also a brand new sponsor, TP2WP. That's TypePad to WordPress. It's a conversion tool to get you from one of those CMSs to the other, and it's very powerful, and we have actually a really cool story to share with you about that. TP2WP.com. For now, let's kick things off. Ugh.
You nailed it, Chris. It's fine. It's fine. No judgment zone. Hello, 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 dear listener. You're listening to the Shop Talk Show, a sound effects podcast that also covers front-end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Christopher Coyer.
That's correct. Christopher Coyer. Hi, Tiffer, everybody.
Who's here with us today?
They did call me that as a wee child, Tiffer.
I'm bringing it back.
It's like Topher, but like cooler. We're with Tim Cadleck. Hey, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. First off, I'm excited that we get to use a new nickname for Chris already, and we're like 5 seconds into the show.
Yep.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I was also looking forward to the...
I almost want it to happen.
Yeah, no, we'll make it happen. I was also looking forward to the sound effect board, experiencing that live. I've always felt like it's probably like jazz, where you have to experience it live to really get the appreciate the full genius of what Dave does there.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, it's
excellent.
See, that's just pure genius right there.
It is. I never thought of it like jazz before, but that's good. I've heard that same analogy used for NASCAR, though. They're like, you know, it looks boring on TV, but if you experience it in person,
NASCAR is like jazz.
Yeah, well, in that you have to be there.
Oh,
forget it.
I've heard NASCAR is just super loud, sort of like Superman, Man of Steel.
Yeah. Like that you're still thinking about that. We and Dave just went to go see that movie World together at the Front End Design Conference, which was really pretty fun down in St. Petersburg, Florida. Should we tell this quick story? It was really nice because we did a live Shop Talk show. So if you're listening to this show, the show right before this one is a live broadcast from the Front End Design Conference, which turned out really pretty good. It was fun. A lot of people liked the show. And you know how we always go, just build websites, when people write on into Shop Talk show about, you know, what should I learn next? You know, I'm having, you know, like it's hard to decide what to learn and that type of stuff. You're like, don't worry about it too much. You know, just try to build your idea, and what you need to learn will kind of come, you know, what you're building will come from that. So just build websites has kind of been our mantra, if you will, for a while here. And we got the whole audience to shout it, and it was the coolest thing ever.
Oh, shall we play it? Shall we?
Yep.
Here we go. So if you're ever wondering what you need to learn, it just remember this.
Just build websites!
Isn't that super epic? I love it.
Just you holding up your phone too to the audience. It's actually better than the one on the show because I say it with the audience, and I was mic'd and they weren't, so I'm like overpowering it. But the one you're recording of it is better.
Oh, it's nice. I go to sleep listening to it.
That's
my new. It's my new go to sleep alarm. Anyway, Tim.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, how many people were in the audience? Just out of curiosity.
A couple hundred, 250,
nice.
Something like that.
250, 300.
Whatever Dan Denny decides is the perfect number, because he sells out and he just has decided he wants to keep it at that number.
That makes sense. Then you get a nice ringtone out of the deal, too.
Indeed. I listened to it several times a day. Tim is a fellow Wisconsinite with me. I live in Milwaukee. Tim lives north, north, north of me.
Yeah, a little bit north, yeah. Well, Eagle River, it's like, I don't know, 1,800 people, maybe? And... Yeah. Significantly less in the winter because no sane person would stay here in the winter.
It's the It's the opposite of a snowbird situation. Yeah. It's like a summer falcon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get some people up here for, like, snowmobiling and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's more of a
Somehow there's a whole bunch of good developers up there, right? Because you used to work for a company that you left, well, maybe a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And what, and you were you know all about conferences because BDConf was your baby in a way. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, we did the... I mean, they're still doing it, too. And, yeah, you're right. It's an awesome group that's there. There's not, like, a lot of us, but the ones that are there are pretty, you know, pretty good, other than me. So the rest of them are cool.
Breaking Development, a conference you helped start, what sets Breaking Development apart? Because, you know, you hear good things about it and stuff like that. And Chris and I have kind of visited, so we know a little bit. But I guess in your words, what makes it special?
Yeah, so I think it was always, I think what worked was that it was always us scratching our own itch. You know, the whole idea for it came out of the fact that we had, you know, we were looking at trying to get the sites, you know, it's a publishing company and they have all these niche magazines and stuff like that, and trying to get sites for these magazines for these to work on, you know, all these different devices. And, you know, Jeff Bruss, who's he's the guy, he's still running it, still got it going strong. He came up with, he's like, well, why don't we just, you know, throw this together and put together our own lineup of what we would like to hear about the topics. And then that's kind of where it came out of. And so every conference, it's, I mean, that's what's fun about it, I think, is getting to put together something that, you know, we're all sitting there and soaking it all up and, you know, basking in the wisdom of everybody's discussions, both on the stage and off the stage. That's the other thing, is it's in these like biodome like things, which Chris, you were at one of the biodome ones. I don't know if Dave, did you ever make one of those?
No, I love it. Yeah. I love the biodome.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I think the way people tend to describe it is like Jurassic Park meets like Disney World or something. I don't know. It's got a little, I don't know, maybe a little bit of creepy just in the terms of just the size, but there's, you know, like live animals, and the one in Nashville has like a river that you can go on a boat ride on. There are these big, big things, but yeah. They also have all these restaurants and bars in there, so it keeps everybody together throughout the conference. And as
That's
a result,
the
you get
thing,
a lot of
right?
awesome side conversations, awesome ones. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You really do. I really like that aspect of it, especially, you know, as a speaker, you're not, you get put up in a hotel and you're like, oh, I guess I know, and you got to go figure out where the venue is and stuff. Not that that stuff is that hard, but I kind of appreciate that, like, it's all under the roof. It's all under the dome.
Yeah, it's nice. It works out well. So they got, I think, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore because, like you said, I did leave a few months back, but they've got one coming up next month in San Diego, and then in, I think September or October, they'll be in Nashville. So,
well, yeah, and that's the biggest one, right? So if
you're... yeah, Nashville's the big one. Nashville, like, yeah, you can get lost in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. And Tim has a book, Implementing Responsive Design, at a website, literally implementingresponsivedesign.com.
Yes.
Right. So if you're all into the responsive thing, which is probably about, I don't know, 99% of the audience of this
ballparking,
yeah, that would be the one to go about. And does it presuppose anything? Is it kind of like, you already know responsive design, let's talk about the details kind of thing? You want to tell us?
Yeah, no, it didn't. I didn't want to make that assumption with the book. So, like, the idea for the book came actually after reading Ethan's awesome book, From a Book Apart, on responsive design, you know, which is like the seminal read on the topic. And it was fantastic, but I wanted something to start to explore a lot of the other areas that, the way that responsive impacted a project and all these other, you know, areas in terms of like content and planning and workflow and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where the idea for the book came out of, but I didn't want to assume that anybody coming in had knowledge of responsive design beforehand. So the first couple chapters kind of explore similar content to what Ethan did, where it, you know, dissects the media queries and fluid layouts, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Cool. And then you're worth mentioning is also your blog too, which has come up on the last couple shows. You've been tangled in a little bit of hot drama around, but apparently you're applying the use of science to the responsive images problem. Would you like to defend yourself on this topic?
Science. Defend myself. Wow. Yeah, so, right. So, responsive images. Can you guys hear that thumping?
Yeah, is that...
Okay.
Is that your wife?
Sorry, but no.
What do they call Bigfoot up there?
I work from my own house. I've got, like, an office in the basement, and I have three girls under the age of four, and okay. So they're typically playing around upstairs, so I apologize for the thumping. At least they're not doing, like, the crying thing, you know, that tends to happen sometimes. Anyway, real professional here. Anyway, so what were we talking? Responsive images. So yeah, so like the thing was like it's such a thorny issue, and Dave, you know this. You've written a ton about this, right? Your images, which I think you discussed like a couple weeks ago. It's such a complicated issue. And like all of the solutions have so many different trade-offs, like, right? They're like complex. They don't necessarily solve all the different, you know, scenarios that they need to solve. And so a lot of people get really like bothered by that. Like, I don't know, like discouraged. It's pretty easy to get discouraged, especially when you look at how long we've been trying to solve this stuff. I mean, it was first an issue that I think Jason Grigsby brought up back in right after the original article on responsive design came out. So that tells you a little bit something about how complex the issue is. But then you get people, you know, a few people I think were starting to maybe, I've seen the argument thrown out a couple times that maybe the best solution is just not to worry about it because of the complexity and all the overhead and stuff like that. So what I wanted to do was check out how much we could actually save by doing like appropriately sized images. On the projects I'd worked on, it had always been a very significant number. But I wasn't sure what that was, you know, if that was just my experience or if that was a general trend. And Yoav Weiss, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly or not. I feel horrible about that. He's this brilliant, brilliant developer who toggles the line between the web development stuff and also being able to work on the actual browser code. And he built this Sizer SOS thing, which lets you go out and, you know, query a site to see how much it would save by serving an appropriately sized image instead of whatever it's serving at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so from that, we worked together to create like a bulk thing. And when I say work together, I mean I hacked together a really ugly, slow thing, and then he made it actually work nice so that we could run it through a big list. So we ran it through like 400 URLs and found out that like on average, it's 72% less image weight would be sent down if we were serving the appropriately sized image on the smallest screen compared to what we're doing on average.
Be like if you smaller than a quarter as big as it is now.
Yeah.
Is that how the math works?
Yeah. That's a little over a quarter. But yeah, it's a big chunk. You know, and considering how much those images are taken up of our current weight and the general trends we've seen with like sites getting fatter and fatter, I mean, that's a big savings.
Could
from
you
one
take that logic and flip it around there? And be like, well, you know, we looked at these 400 URLs, and what we would have liked to done is detected if they are Retina and served them bigger images. So these websites could have been twice as big, but oh shucks, we didn't accommodate that, so they're smaller.
Are you saying like testing what it would have been with a Retina display?
Yeah, kind of. It's the same kind of. That's one of the many complex things about responsive images. It's not always. Let's figure out if we can give them a smaller image and then give them the smaller image. It's now with Retina. It's like, should they get an even bigger image too? It kind of works both directions, right?
Yeah, the Retina thing is kind of messy for so many reasons. Like, you want those beautiful images on there, but at the same time, they're so fat. You know, they've got so much weight to them. That gets into the whole debate of, like, how much do we get to assume about what the user actually wants? Do they want, like, the high-def, beautiful images? Do they want the, you know, a less quality image that's going to load much faster and weigh, you know, half as much or whatever it might be? You know, there's things people are doing to get around that, like the compressive images thing. You guys see that, right?
Yeah,
which is, you know, JPEG black magic. Somebody actually explained to me one time, I keep calling it black magic, and somebody, I was giving a talk somewhere about it, and somebody in the audience is like, well, actually, this is how it works, and they went into like this.
Oh, I thought they were going to tell you that's offensive, that term.
No. Oh, is that offensive?
Probably.
I don't know.
To witches.
I have no idea. I'm just kidding.
Oh, geez. That's great. No, so I hope if to any witches listening to the podcast, I apologize for that. But no, so like they got up and they gave like this 10-minute explanation of like the science behind it. To talk about science. I mean, this was intense. I have no idea what they said, but it sounded brilliant. But yeah, the compressive images thing, like taking a JPEG and making it really low quality, and then serving that up, and it comes in file size keeps down, but then the actual, like the way it looks when it's in the browser is still better than if you would have served a high quality, lower sized image, which is kind of bizarre, but
that's pretty magic.
Indeed.
Did you do that on a post recently, Chris? Yes.
Did I do it on a post recently?
A compressive image thing on a post? No.
I usually do. I usually take the Dave's approach where I make an image a little bigger than I know that it's going to scale down to because I know that will look good. But it also allows me to be really lazy when I'm screenshotting stuff or whatever. I'll be like, how wide do I make images these days? Let's go with 700. I don't know, which is lazy and weird. Yeah, so the last 2 days on CSS Tricks have had some responsive images related stuff, and neither of them, you know, neither of them are like now this is the number one thing that I'm going to recommend, but I was happy to post them because there is no, you know, super perfect solution to this yet, and I think any implementation of it that's like, that somebody actually used and implemented and they like it, I think is valid to talk about because there is no perfect solution. And then, of course, somebody in the comments right away is like, this solution sucks because X, you know, and you're like, of course it fails in some way, you know, like,
yeah.
I wrote back and I was like, you know, the reason that this is so complicated is because they're like, well, you know, semantics are a big part of it. Do you want to just use the image tag or do you want to use the new picture thing or something else? And like, so one of the ways that you can get around the browser preloader thing is to have an image, but not use a source attribute and then load the source later with JavaScript. We're like, well, that sucks for stuff like RSS because you can't run the JavaScript and that image will be totally broken. So the semantics are kind of broken of that thing, but it gets around the major issue of loading more than one source and stuff like that. So that you could go down a road like that, which, you know, has big ups and big downs. There's stuff about, you know, like, is multiple requests a situation that is ever acceptable, or are we gunning towards the only one request ever situation? Should CSS be involved? Should HTML be involved? Should JavaScript be involved? I'm not sure exactly, you know, all those different things. Like, what about the art direction use case? Do we need, is that important, or is it more important that we just kind of scale up and scale down? You know, can browsers help? How important are browsers in the world? Do they need to implement stuff, or can we get around it through protocols and servers and stuff? I mean, it touches the whole web stack. This is the, like,
you make it sound so simple. I have no idea why it's taken over 2 years to find anything.
Yeah. Don't they listen to this podcast?
Right. We just got it solved. Just fix those things and you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's messy, and you know, and it goes against, like, I think, and I had that too, like, one of the comments on that post, which brought up excellent points, but one of the comments was, well, this isn't really, you know, their file size thing really isn't that important, because it's more important to, like, optimize the request and the pipeline, and, like, they were going into this other stuff, and there's a lot of truth in, like, some of those individual pieces, but I think responsive images, one of the reasons why everybody struggles with it so much is that it seems like we all kind of like these, you know, these one size fits all binary solves everything solutions, which they just don't really exist. And especially in the issue of responsive images, I mean, there is no one size fit all solution. I mean, they're all, like you said, they all fail at something. And there's all, you know, there's just too many concerns, too many different issues floating around for it to try and negotiate. And we don't have any idea how to solve all of them yet, if ever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really. We have a couple questions about this, so yeah, wait for a minute on that? We have it's a little light on drama. We have a good one about diversity that I hope we'll get to later. So stick around for that. But let's do that. Which one did you find, Dave?
The other little bit of drama, and we can just highlight it real quick. But there's a post on Medium called "The Sidebar in Your Blog is Garbage," and you guys, is hot garbage. All right. So it's just not garbage. It's hot garbage. And, as you guys know, Medium is the solver of all problems, right? It's the platform for solving problems at large. So I just thought it was very interesting because there is like a trend in responsive web design to just let the sidebar go because it's not very, it's just more hassle for a blog, right? But at the same time, pretty handy if you have to put stuff in there. I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up because
I'm very conflicted. I think it is. It's silly, but it's fascinating because, okay, now you're reading this post and you're like, you know what? There is no sidebar on Medium except for the little area with his you know, author picture and stuff, which isn't very sidebar-y. And we've all seen blogs that don't have a sidebar that look very clean and nice and whatever. And he's like, you know, they're just, they're full of ads, or they're full of tag clouds, or they're full of related posts and garbage like that. Like, just yank it kind of thing. And I feel like, you know, you're kind of right. But also, you know, the reason I'm sitting here talking to you today, the reason that I'm working at home today, the reason I work on the projects that I work on, literally my whole life is like basically at this stage of my life is made possible through the advertising income that I make on CSS Tricks. It's my career. And there, it started in the sidebar, and there's still a lot of it at the sidebar today. So, like, if you don't think my career is my career hot garbage... No.
Watch the chat room.
No. Yeah.
I didn't mean to go off that bad, but you know. And then I look on the CSS Tricks sidebar now. I'm like, did I just shovel crap over here? I have a login section for the lodge, which is also a big part of my career. And you know, and it helps. That's where people can go log in when they're lodge members. There's a poll, which is fun for the people that come to the site, and it increases some engagement and starts conversations. So I expose some areas for people to sign up through RSS and get to the iTunes and stuff. And yes, there's some advertising over there as well. And I just like, this is vital. This is vital stuff for my site. So I'm conflicted because I get it. I get the article, but also it's like, yeah, it's a little too important on my blog.
I mean, Chris Coyer has got to keep driving that Ferrari, you know?
I don't have a Ferrari, but I do have a truck that I like. That's was reasonably mid-grade truck.
But I just think it's very... I just love blanket statements. I don't know. Tim, you only have one column on your site, so clearly you're on the garbage.
I'm totally right. Nobody should ever have a sidebar because I don't. No, I don't.
Good, yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, it's a blanket statement. I don't know. There's times where, yeah, that's probably true. You are probably, I've seen plenty of sites where they clearly just shoved whatever they didn't have room for over in a sidebar. But, you know, a lot of that stuff supports the content that's there or provides, you know, like in Chris's examples, provides either value for the people to, you know, being able to log in or find additional posts that might be related or things like that, or value for Chris. You know, advertising is one of those things that you could probably do a whole podcast on, and then you might need, like, to take a shower afterwards because you'd feel a little dirty, but it's an important thing, so.
Yeah.
I like this line drawing of a brain at the end here. Reach into your brain and lobotomize yourself, because you can't. Otherwise, you'll never be able to let go of your sidebar.
Drawings of a brain are hot garbage.
It gets a little extra dickheady at the end there. Sorry.
I think it's very interesting because anyway, like, I do think there is this thing like responsive, like it's forcing sites to like exist in a single column more or less, right? So then you're like making hierarchy decisions. Are my advertisements, should they go at the top of the blog post or the bottom of the blog post? And usually you're like at the bottom. And then at some point you're just like, why don't they just stay at the bottom and I'll just do one column? So it does, like, responsive is kind of breaking us up from the sidebar. But I mean, it used to be back in the day, you would just be like, of course this has a sidebar. Why not two? Most e-commerce systems actually still work like that. It's like, does this go on the left or the right sidebar? Just choose in the CMS. And yeah, I don't know.
It's just the blanket statement should be like, bad design is bad design, you know, but that wouldn't be as fun, you know?
That's a good post.
I would read that.
I'm going to get it. All right. Well, that's all I got for Hot Drama. I just thought it was very fun. From the news and links section, you guys have probably already seen it, but the Brad Frost wrote a post about mobile web problems, and we'll have a link. But it's basically like, I'm calling it in my brain, it's like the DSM, you know, like the Diagnostics and Statistics of Mental Disorders or something for mobile websites. It's basically like all the like, common problems and dumb things people do on the mobile web. So I liked it. I assume, Tim, you enjoyed it as well.
I did enjoy it. Brad always does a good job of, like, you know.
That's what Brad is good at.
Yeah, he's really good at presenting, like, in the way that he did that with that article, right? So here's the problem. Here's the potential solution. I don't know. It's good. It's definitely worth a read. It's a good structure. Lots of don't do this. And thankfully, how to actually not do this instead of just telling you don't do this and then making you solve it by yourself.
Indeed. Speaking of science, there was a I don't know how to pronounce Sime Vidis. What's the when there's a little tiny V over a letter? I don't know how to pronounce that. But anyway, I'll link up the tweet in the chat room there. And it's just speaking of science, he analyzed 53,000 of Alexa's top sites and looked at whether those websites contain what HTML5 stuff, you know, markup related that they use. And it's, you know, it's pretty dang low. It's, you know, like 11% of them use header and footer. 3% use role equals main. 4.7% use any ARIA attribute. 4%, you know, that's kind of sucks.
Yeah.
We can do better.
Yeah, only 53% of them had an H1 tag. You know, stuff like that. Like, are you kidding? Really?
Oh, wow.
And, but 13% have a placeholder attribute. So of all the things that are specifically HTML5, the placeholder attribute is king, which I think is crazy, probably misused. You know, I'd say, like, I'm sure like 12% of those are like, oh, we don't need labels anymore. You know, like, if it's bad news, it's probably the case, you know.
Oh,
I hadn't seen this. This is cool, though. Data's cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Did you guys see that BigQuery thing that Google just rolled out?
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah. So I haven't dug into it at all yet too much, but it's apparently this this service that they came up with that it'll let you do analysis of all these like huge data sets. So things that would be absolutely painful to try and do on your own server or on your own machine. Like one of the examples, like how I heard about it was, you know, HTTP archive, which is the performance, like, you know, Steve Sodder's thing, right?
Steve Sodder's performance. Yeah.
I'll put there's the BigQuery link in the chat, but, the HTTP archive stuff, right? It's this, you know, massive data set. The example I saw was like opening up and using BigQuery to actually run queries and like compare all sorts of interesting things about from that data, like how many sites out of all the ones profiled use, different versions of jQuery on the same site, or how many of them use more than one JavaScript framework and things like that. And it's pretty intense, pretty slick.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm working on a site right now, and for whatever reason, like, I think it's because they're using Brightcove as the video thing. It's like doubling the number of requests or something like that. Like, it's weird. There's weird stuff going on. The internet's weird. That's cool.
This is true.
All right. So should we get into some questions? It seems like we've been going.
We should. Maybe I'll do a sponsor before we even do questions,
Just
because it's 30 minutes or whatever. I was going to do – let me tell you the TP2WP story or whatever, because they sent it in. So this is – TP is type pad or movable type. Those are like – I don't know how they relate. They're the same thing, I guess. A type pad to WordPress. So this is – the idea is this is a little software product that will move, you know, from your CMS of using type pad over to using WordPress, TP2WP.com. They sent us this story. In January, Andrew Sullivan launched an experiment in independent blogging. After years of being supported by The Atlantic and The Daily Beast and stuff, apparently he made subsidiary income from them somehow. He decided to launch a totally user-supported blog. No ads, just subscriptions. So to make this possible, he needed to get 86,000 posts over to WordPress from this huge thing. So, I mean, that's a big change, and it's something that you don't want to screw up, right? And WordPress has all these, you know, plugins and stuff to make this possible. Literally on CSS Tricks, I use a subscription plugin too, and it works great. So, I could see why you'd want to get over to WordPress to take advantage of the, you know, more robust plugin architecture and stuff. So he turns to TypePad to WordPress, this tool, the conversion engine that preserves everything that's important to bloggers, not just posts, but the images in those posts, the file attachments, the permalink structure that you already had, so you're not breaking links, your tags, your categories, guest authors, like who wrote that post. host, and all that stuff. If you just use TypePad's export file, they have some kind of export feature, but you lose most of that. If you use this tool, you just retain all of that stuff. So it provides customers with a free WordPress plugin, which corrects one of TypePad's weirdest eccentricities, saving images without file extension. So apparently there's something when it exports it that's been broke forever that this fixes. So thanks to this this software thing, Andrew Sullivan, his blog is now the biggest user-supported blog on the entire internet. So there pretty cool. Cool. $39 to use it. $10 off that if you use coupon code SHOPTALK6 at tp2wp.com. It's one of the things where you should just probably go and bookmark it in Pinboard or whatever and be like, conversion tool or, you know, TypePad conversion or whatever. Because you probably don't need it this second, but when it comes up, you'll be like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That will be totally useful.
I have a site 3 weeks ago, a movable type site just went down on me entirely because I upgraded Perl on the server. So it's in my interest to get the client off of movable type as fast as possible. So anyway, it's so I'm going to be using this. There you go.
Mr. Ben Frain, previous guest on Shop Talk Show, writes in two questions for Tim. Number one, Tim, you're a husband, a father of three, you write books, run, speak at conferences, and still have great-looking hair. What's the secret?
To the hair? Because the hair things come up. No.
Common question.
Product, right? Product.
Don't sleep. Don't have a life. No, I don't know. I actually sit there and wonder and odd at other people, I think, that are far more productive than I am. Like, I should see how many things that I have planned to do but have never, ever done. So, I don't know. I don't know that there's really any... Yeah, there's nothing special there. It's just fun. I enjoy all of it that I do. So, like, you know, for me, this is kind of my hobby outside. And yeah. Just don't have a life. Family. You'll be safe.
Ooh, laptop! Oh.
That's an old one. That's good. Yeah. Okay, so Ben has two questions. That was the first one. The second one was about responsive images, and I think I'll read it, and then I'm going to combine it with the next question, because we've already talked about this one already. And anyway, on responsive images, from an implementation point of view, do you generally favor responsive images techniques that require author intervention, like using the picture element or source set or some kind of special markup that you need to make this thing happen? Or set it and forget it methods such as adaptive-images.com. Now that one, just you just leave your image with a source tag in it, and that's the way it, you know, you don't have no author intervention is the point. So that's Ben Frain's question. I'll read the next one too, so we can talk about them together. Adam Bradley writes in, there are many different responsive images solutions out there, but no clear winner on which solution is to use. Since each one has a trade-off, as we talked about before. Authors often comment on which ones they like, but it's difficult to find large-scale websites using a solution in the wild. Which responsive image have you actually put into production on client sites, and what made it you choose it over the others? So Ben's like, which ones do you like, the markup-oriented ones? And if we've picked one, which one is it?
Sure.
You wanna tackle that? Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's a good question. I think it the boring answer is it depends. I mean, there's ideally I prefer to use something like, I don't know, I've used PictureFill on a lot of different projects. It's, I mean, partly because it is, I think the markup, I don't know, it solves a lot of the issues, not all of them. It fights the preloader, but theoretically you could do art direction with it, and you know, you can do the different sized images. And I like Matt Wilcox's adaptive images solution quite a bit for if we can't figure out a process for getting those different sized images to display, like to be produced, because that'll do that on the fly. Something like that, or like Sentia.io does, they have a service that'll do something like that. I like those things for those scenarios. They're not, you know, one of the things with those solutions is... they don't handle a scenario very well where if the image actually needs to be bigger on a smaller screen than on a larger screen. So say you go from like a one column layout to like a three column layout at a larger screen, and the image now becomes a little bit smaller. you know, the adaptive images one for neither one of those would be smart enough to be able to make the decision to create a smaller image for that larger screen.
I was just thinking about that today, about how columns is such a big thing for this.
And you can work around that with like something like PictureFill. You can work around that with. It's got, you know, it's a little verbose at the moment with all the empty spans it is now and the media queries all being there. But there's ways to work around that. There's even ways to work around like the producing of the images. Like, I don't think I can necessarily, Well, the one project that we just, that I'm still kind of wrapping up that, what we did there for responsive images, we used PictureFill, and then we've actually got, some processes running after they upload the site, the image. It'll actually compress the image and produce, you know, images at different sizes. And there, in that case, for simplicity at the moment, it's like percentages. It'll produce a 75% sized, a 50% sized, and a 25% sized image of whatever gets uploaded. And then we took PictureFill and we just made that like an include so that we didn't have to necessarily, you know, if in a year picture element completely dies or it's implemented or whatever, and we have to change the way that that is used, they can just update that include and it'll update everywhere. But then that dynamically pulls in from the server all those sized images. It's kind of intense, but it gets the job done really, really well. So, I mean, there's ways. So I liked Adam Bradley, actually, the fine gentleman who asked the second question. I think he was the one who has a quote that he said something about, like, the ideal image workflow, save for web, does not exist. Like, ideally, this would all be taken care of as some sort of process. And I totally am on board with that. It's not always a reality at the moment, just because it takes some time to establish that and get something in place. But that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, like the idea of like using a WordPress plugin of some kind. So as soon as you hit upload on your large image, which you've mandated to your people that write content, hey, make sure all your images are at least 1,000 pixels wide or something. And then it processes them into smaller sizes. And then you even click a button to insert it in the post and it puts the right markup in there for you and that kind of thing, like using tools to help.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, WordPress works. I mean, they've got the ability to do that. I think Expression Engine has a few things that would work really, really well. For that. I mean, there's something like that for each of them. The more troubling part is if you want to incorporate art direction into that, then you actually do need to deal with, like, you know, producing another image and getting that in place or setting, like, allowing them to crop it somehow in the editorial. Yeah, but, I mean, just the resizing isn't, you know, nearly as complex in terms of production.
Yeah. I think just anecdotal, because I've yet to really do a project where I usually just basically do the 1.5x thing. Mm-hmm. I just use one and I 1.5 it and call it a day, which doesn't always feel great. But just from listening to people, the one where there's like if they've actually used it in a project, it's almost always PictureFill. So that's, yeah, I think, was probably the largest in-use one.
It's a popular choice. I think, you know, it's a familiar syntax for people, which I think helps. You know, people are, if you're looking at responsive images, you've already got yourself well introduced to things like media queries and stuff like that. So the syntax is really easy for you to pick up and apply, you know.
And remind me, does Picture look exactly like every other new media syntax? Because I get confused on this. It looks exactly right.
The media syntax? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then that makes sense. God, it just drives me nuts. Sorry. Why would anyone suggest anything different?
Oh, the source set thing is how weird that is. Yeah.
Yeah. The beef with Uncle Dave here.
Anyway. Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, has anybody had the, I'm sure this will happen unfairly, possibly, is the kind of like PictureFill a year later or something, like we went with PictureFill and now we have to redesign our website and now we have all this data in our database that's, you know, full of media crusty queries that are irrelevant to our redesign of our site, you know, like, well, maybe you should have thought of that or something. Is that a valid criticism of it? Or
I haven't heard anything that anybody's said about that, but I will say that, like, that's the reason why on that project we actually pulled that out into its separate little piece, and we put the we have the picture fill, like the markup, like basically think of it as like a mustache template. It's not a mustache template, but something like that, right?
That's
we have
the way
that
to do
sitting
it.
Somewhere, and then we have like the breakpoint logic somewhere else. So if you need to change from picture fill, you can do that easily. If you need to change the breakpoint stuff, again, you can change that easily and not have to worry about. Because I could see a scenario where, yeah, you could get yourself in trouble with that if you actually have it sitting inside of the markup all over the place.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of having it be a little template. That's cool. Some kind of placeholder.
That yep. Short code or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Mm.
So, if you like this type of talk and you want to, like, go to, like, maybe, like, some kind of online event, possibly, where you get to talk for 3 days with other nerds about CSS issues like this, you should probably go to the CSS Summit. Go to CSSSummit.com. It's the big event of Environments for Humans this year. It's 3 days long, and like I said, it's online. You can go to it from wherever. You just do it from home or do it from work or whatever, and you go into this chat room type of thing where it's showing the video of the speaker, and they're going through their slides, and they're talking live. And answering questions live, like your questions, but you can do it from anywhere. That's July 23rd through 25th. Dave will be at it. Very reasonably priced thing, but you can save 20% off by using coupon code SHOPTALK. So, yeah, you all know Environments for Humans, our longtime sponsor. Check that out. That's the big one.
I'm going to be talking about responsive images, actually.
Nice.
So there you go.
Is it called
That's awesome.
Images?
It's Mo Pixels, Mo Problems, but I'll yeah, it's going to get it. I don't know. My images is a little bit more about like personal gripes, but yeah, we'll get there. I'll have some updates too. A few things have come out, you know, like your post, Tim, and then like, yeah, it should be good. So
That's good news. How relevant was that? Good segue.
Hey,
let's get to some more questions so we can hear,
Yeah, here we go. So Gary Armstrong wrote in and said, this one's interesting. Hello there. I'd love to know your thoughts on the state of infographics and CSS JavaScript. There have been a few whiz-bang implementations of infographics using a parallax effect recently, but many of them seem heavy and distract from the content of itself. Modo.ugly. Have you seen any examples of pages using mostly CSS animations to tell a story or company history? Also, Tim, how do you feel about animated infographics? How do animated infographics fit into a responsive workflow? Tim.
Wow.
Two questions.
So when he says animated infographics, just to clarify, is he talking about like the modo.oakley.com kind of thing?
Well, maybe like Apple's MacBook or Mac Pro have you?
Yeah. Anything? So I'm kind of torn on those because, all right, they're slick. I mean, they look pretty slick, right? But they're some of the worst fat sites that are out there at all. I mean, like, Apple's is big. The Oakley thing, they got those down, by the way. It's no longer 80 megs or whatever it was when it launched. Now it's like 10.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so I don't know exactly what they did to bring it down there, but it's still 10 megs. I don't know. So I think this is one of those things that's really tough because, like, you want to experiment visually with the medium, and this is something that the web being interactive and everything like can do that other places, you know, other mediums couldn't pull off, is these kind of interactive, visual animated infographic stuff. But, at the same time, you got to respect people. And I think performance is kind of about respect. And like when you shove, you know, 10 megs of visuals, no matter how slick they are, in front of somebody by default, it seems like a little bit of a disrespectful thing to do, potentially a very expensive thing for them to do too, depending on what they got for a data plan or if they happen to be roaming, God forbid. You know, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it.
You know, I like these effects. Like Jen Lucas has a talk called, or a website called F Yeah Hovers, but you spell out the F, right? This is a PG show. They're cool. But most of those things are scroll triggered, right? Like you scroll down and like something zips in and is like, wham, I'm here, buddy.
Excellent.
But the problem you're going to hit is iOS does not do this. Like, iOS does not allow you to, like, scroll trigger, because it'll stop the scroll event whenever you're on, when you're touching it. So it'll only fire the scroll event when you let off touching. So in theory, a user could be at the bottom of a page before any scroll event triggers. So, and there's not really a great workaround other than, like, hijacking the, like, scroll entirely. So, well, you could, that's my experience. Yeah.
Well, like, you know, assigning things to the on-scroll event is kind of it's a dangerous territory anyway, because that can blow things down really quick, because that fires so much, typically. Mm-hmm. So I understand why they're playing a little prevent ball there, I guess. Can't you get around that a little bit with, like, a timeout? You know, if you're firing off an event versus off a timeout and checking to see if the scroll position has changed. Yeah.
But still, it's like, then you have a timeout running.
Right. I mean, yeah, you're still running into a similar issue, but it can maybe let you play around a little bit around. No, I don't know.
And ideally, you could use request animation frame. When I saw that, I was like, heck yeah, dude, this is going to work. Doesn't work. It's like, it doesn't want to recalc when you're scrolling. It doesn't do that. It's so lame. I'm angry. Apple, I'm angry at you for reasons.
Part of the question was, does it distract from the content itself? Mm-hmm. Is the what they're very trying to do hurting it by its implementation? No.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's cool. Probably gets more engagement for the people that happen to be lucky enough to be on a you know, happy to have enough money to buy a Mac Pro.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think it takes away from that. Bad design is bad design, like Chris said. So
yeah, there you go.
Unless you do it bad, that poorly, then yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and then responsive is a part of it too. Like, that's one of those things. Like, I guess you happen to be in a position where you don't have to make it all that responsive, because, I don't know, you might be better off, you know, trying to detect mobile somehow and being like, nope. Mm-hmm. That might be like oh god, that sounds so terrible to recommend. I take my words back.
Well, but maybe what you decide to do there though is, like, maybe
spit out a feature list or whatever.
You don't have all the same weird parallax and rotating glasses and stuff like that on the small screen. I think like Oakley,
but there's otherwise content parity or whatever.
Yeah, like content parity, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you have to display it in exactly the same way, right? And I think Oakley was doing that. Like, they had on their large screen layout, it does all of these, like, things come in from all over the place and glasses rotate and, you know, fireworks go off and stuff like that, right? But then on, like, the small screen, none of that was really happening, but all that stuff was still there, all that JavaScript, all those images, whether or not anything fancy happened with them. I don't know. It would take some... You'd have to be thinking about that from the very beginning and starting with that mobile base, but you could get that to where it wasn't at least it wasn't the same weight. It was at least somewhat lighter.
Mm-hmm. You can do pretty good. You can do some cool stuff. One of my favorite sites is infographic-y, is Station Street Hot Dogs, Station Street PGH Pittsburgh. This was by the Pixel Worker guys. And it's basically just a canvas animation of hot dog contents. And it's responsive. It's just a simple, like on load, fire a animation. But I love it.
It's because you like flat design.
Well, I like hot dogs too. I think this is the perfect way to describe a hot dog.
in a graph of its okay.
Of its contents.
At least I like that there's no hot dog that's less than 50% hot dog. They're all at least
all dog, baby. Hot dog. It's good. All right, cool. Well, next
Robert
question.
Costin writes in, isn't display table cell awesome? Why don't CSS developers use it more often? Is it because the name? Would it be better if we called it Awesome Box?
The old display Awesome Box.
Yeah. I like display table. I'm a fan.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
You like it?
I do.
What about columns? Would you make a column layout with display table and display table cell?
For sure. Yeah, I do that. It's nice. The support's better than you'd like. If you haven't used display table, the support's a lot better than you probably think it is. And you can,
it's like IE7 plus or something.
It's
right?
Like IE7 or IE7 or IE8. I can't remember which one exactly, but yeah, it's plus, and it's mobile support is pretty good too. And, you can do
some. Let me just devil's advocate for you, so all you can right, respond fire. To the questions. Are you ready?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I'm not. I'm just, this
no,
is
no.
just,
no, it's good.
I'm going to little snipe in my real
one-on-one hot job.
So let's say you wanted to switch those, the columns around. Would you be like, oh, no big deal. I'll just switch, because I'll just change the source order, right? Like let's, you have the sidebar on the right, you want to make the sidebar on the left.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, yeah, I mean, source order is an issue with, display table is not necessarily going to solve that for you. You'd have to use something like, append around or something like that to move and shuffle different bits.
Why don't you just use table and TRs and TDs?
Oh, because that's wrong. No, so the difference between that, yeah.
I'm
so
grilling you on it. Purpose. Yep.
No, right. So no, the difference, I think this is something that people get hung up on in the display table, stuff with, we've been conditioned to have this adverse reaction to tables. Because, for a while everybody was using them for layout, and then everybody's like, no, don't use it for layout. And then we all felt really ashamed and embarrassed.
Because,
Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura, where he's taking the plunger to his mouth after he finds out that he kissed a guy. You remember the scene? Finkel and Einhorn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that with it. That's a reaction to tables. And so I think we kind of apply that to the CSS stuff. But this is, I don't know. It's not defining the, it's not in the markup. It's not anything semantic related. It's actually the presentation, behave like a table in the way that you present the information. I don't know. I have no problem with that, personally. And it lets me do cool stuff. I like to do things you can fix a column with if you want and have the other one be totally fluid. So if advertising requirements, a lot of ad networks don't like you to resize their ads. So maybe you have sidebar column again. Here we go. But you have a sidebar column that's a set width to meet, maybe the ad requirement dictates that that's about that size or whatever. You can have that stay a fixed width, and the other one will fill whatever the remaining space of the container is fluidly with a little display table action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, the answer is very light semantics you get out of it. I literally think mostly if you really want to exploit the layout of display table, you could literally use table elements. I mean, a div doesn't mean anything either. A div is semantics free. But maybe semantics free is better than the implied semantics of a table, which is that it's tabular
that's
data.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you use table for table data,
Sure. But the fact that you're implying table data with a table element is bad, because that's not what you're using it for in this case. You just want the abilities of table cell. Well, that's very legitimate to me. I like that answer. It does have very useful things, right? Like vertical align works pretty well in table cells and that type of stuff. There's no space between inline blocks of inline blocks lined up have some pretty useful stuff, but there's little bugs that make them suck that way. I would say anything good that you get out of display table cell, you're going to get out of Flexbox, and that the days of this are
yeah.
Enumerated. It's definitely not something that I don't, if we're still using display table to pull this stuff off in a couple years, then I'm going to feel really, really sad, because things like Flexbox and regions and grid layout and stuff like that, hopefully will stabilize all of those things to a point where that becomes super usable.
Yeah,
I mean, Flexbox is awesome. We just need a few things to catch up right now in terms
of
awesome syntax.
It looks
and
so good though. Have you guys seen?
It is. It's slick.
No, but I mean, browser support wise, it's. I mean, it may
it's
not be a
there.
Today thing. Yeah, it's nearly there. It's just the IE9 is the worst of it. But really, everything else has some kind of implementation of it. It is pretty ready to go for prime time if you can get away with killing IE9, which is really tough.
Yeah,
so I get
that's
that, but,
yeah. The support,
but
thing
like
is
most
actually
of the browsers are going unprefixed on the new version, so it's it's awesome.
Although there's still a few, I don't know, who was it? Somebody wrote something about, was it Financial Times? I don't know. Somebody like that wrote an article about using Flexbox and how they had some performance serious performance hits in terms of like the scrolling performance and stuff. But that's something that's, you know, the browser is going to fix that hopefully soon. Hopefully, like with the next version, that if it's Chrome, it'll be like
is
tomorrow.
There some scrolling performance with Flexbox?
I thought it was something that. Like that. I don't know.
Oh, that makes me die.
I don't die.
I would blow some horns on that, man.
It might not be scrolling. I could be thinking wrong. There was, it's, I don't know, it's something on Smash.
Okay.
If
you
do I'll post it up. But yeah, there was like that, and then, you know, but those are things where the browser will catch up, and the browser, I mean, it's such a new, it took them forever to stabilize on the syntax. We can't possibly expect everybody to have it right on the first go here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'll fix it.
It looks like they have, though. I mean, it's pretty ready to rock in the newest versions of all the stuff. Anyway, anything that you get good out of Display Table Star, I promise you can get out of Flexbox. Mm-hmm. I've been like playing with it a bunch lately, and I just think it's so awesome. And somebody asked in the chat room, is it going to be is there going to be any problems with source order? And no, that's its strongest point. Almost is that it's so super duper source order not dependent.
You can make your footer your header.
It is linear, though. It is single directional, but with wrapping. So it can do wrapping, which is cool. But it is mostly like I'm describing how something goes in one direction. So grid will be the thing that will help us with the kind of, I don't know, 2D, I guess, instead of 1D version of it. I just couldn't be more excited about the new Flexbox. And Robert, if you have a good use case for Table Cell, maybe send it in. We could all vote on whether we think it's nasty or not. I've heard, you know, like back in the day, I remember like an old Eric Meyer tweet where he's like, deceiving yourself and using a div instead of a TD is just ridiculous. You know, like it's just a wolf in sheep's clothing or whatever. But, you know, there are obviously use cases. And anyway, am I dragging on that too long? Should we try to do one more?
Let's do one more. Do you want to do the Edwina one? Yeah, let's do this one. We talked about at the top of the show.
Yeah.
So this one's maybe a little bit of hot drama here. So, but we're totally into this one. So Edwina Moss writes in and says, hello, I've been checking out Shop Talk and a bunch of other design theme podcasts. I'm getting into design and coding and checking out different resources. And I had a question. How do you find the people that you want to interview? The reason I ask is because on your site and most other design sites I've found never talk about or feature any Black designers or developers. As a Black woman interested in this field, I've found organizations like Black Girls Code, but that seems more like a fundraiser for kids than something for people of color actually working on doing stuff in this field. It would be really great to know who is doing what or who is doing what I want to do that also look like me. You could, that's a really good statement. You could probably reach a whole other segment of the design community by diversifying depending on how you find people to interview. Anyway, that's just a thought. I'd love to hear a reply on an upcoming show about this. Thanks.
Chris? That was an excellent email, I thought, because it was, you know, it was just letting us know that perhaps not super diverse in that particular segment of diversity, without yelling at us, which sometimes we get, which just makes us feel bad, and that's never kind of a good way to approach it, I guess. Unless, or maybe it is, you know, like I always find it, I have to tiptoe around diversity stuff because I feel like ill-equipped to talk about it sometimes, and it's like kind of a scary topic. We do think about it. We do try. Okay. This is kind of my thought of why I get scared of this issue kind of is that like I feel like we should try to do a better job and we will. And I think if we were to cut this off right here, I'd be like, Edwina, I promise that we're going to try to do better, in this as well as every other type of diversity that we can. But that feels weird because whether this is valid or not, it feels like now we are considering race in the people that we get on to interview, whereas before we weren't. So that, like, in some weird way, that feels like we're being more racist by considering race. But I'm sure there's explanations for that, that, you know, that perhaps overcompensating the other way is good for the world or whatever. But it, I don't know. You know, can you sense my uncomfortability?
Yeah, no, I thought this was a great email, and I knew it was a great email because like it kind of bummed me out, and just because when I look at like my Twitter. The 300 people I follow or whatever on Twitter, it's like, yeah, it's mostly like white dudes. So I need personally to like whatever restructure my social setup because I think there's such a and she points this out is just there's such a lack of diversity in STEM, like science, technology, engineering, math fields. I think I did that right. There's such a, like a lack of diversity in all these fields. It's like, you know, a podcast like ours, we should be doing the best we can to like, whatever, encourage more diversity. I feel like, so anyway, I thanks, but Edwina.
Tim could chime in as a conference. Yeah. I do appreciate that. And you're right. And we're going to do better in that way. But you had to surely think about this type of thing when organizing conferences and stuff.
Yeah. I'm kind of with Chris on this, and that it's, you know, something that I really struggle with, like, just because I do often feel ill-equipped. And I've seen like the things, like the thoughts that I have, debunked by other people before. It's something you have to keep in mind for sure, because, I think that, you know, organizing a conference or doing the podcast, I mean, you are, you know, in a way you're coming from a little bit of a position of influence, right? Where you have a little bit of impact, even the tiniest little bit of impact on the industry and what people are hearing about and who they're hearing it from. But it's tough because you don't want to feel like that's, I mean, it's the same thing. Like when we were doing like speakers and stuff, we never really looked at it from, oh geez, we don't have any, you know, representative from this particular crowd of underrepresented people. You know, it was just like, hey, this person is doing awesome stuff. Let's bring this person in. But yeah, similar to what Dave was saying, you know, a lot of the times I look up and I look around and just what, for whatever reason, the people that I'm aware of, the people that I'm hearing from tend to, you know, be in a very certain specific kind of crowd. So yeah, I guess it's making a cognizant effort to try and expand that a little bit, and just being aware that, again, if you're in a position like that where you are running a conference or you're doing a podcast and you have a little bit of influence over what people are hearing from who, trying to make sure that you're giving a voice to people who may not be getting the voice elsewhere. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling, partly because I have a lot of the same discomfort, but you know.
No, she just raises a great point. I mean, it's literally design conferences are like white dudes with dark glasses and plaid shirts. It's just like, it's so heavily skewed that we need to maybe, I feel like whatever, find different role models. So yeah, then the like common norm. So anyway. That maybe sounds
good answer, and I like the. No, I don't think okay. So. And okay. I like Tim's point of that you have even more responsibility to do it when you're representative of the industry, even in any small way.
So
that's a good place to end it, I think.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Edwina, for writing in. I appreciate it. It was like really loving email. Really appreciate it. So
yeah, me too. And then it can be done so badly too. Like bummed. Dave said it's bummed out, and it's a little bummer to read. But I've been like, you know, let's forget it. Let's
yeah. it was
like a lot further than being rude.
Yeah. It's like a good kind. It's not like quit my job kind. So anyway, Mr. Tim, how can people follow you? Give you money. Buy your books. How does that work?
Sure. So I accept all forms of currency. Okay. No, I don't know if you want to. I'm on Twitter at tkadlec, T-K-A-D-L-E-C. I blog infrequently, unfortunately, at timkadlec.com. And then the book is, I think, as you mentioned, it's implementingresponsivedesign.com, where you can purchase copies for you. your spouse, your family, your children, anybody really. It's for all ages. So I guess, yeah, that would probably be the best ways to follow and give me money.
Sweet. And goes without saying, this is one of the best responsive web books out there. So people should check it out.
It's very kind. I'll give you the check afterwards for the
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, just $600,000. Okay.
All right. Don't air that part. Edit that out.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, Tim. I really appreciate it. And thanks again, chat room. You guys are the best. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, subscribing in iTunes, and doing all that. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show and rate us up and do all that. Tell your friends. And I don't usually promote other episodes, but that live show is a really good one. You should listen to it. One of my favorites from Front End Comp. So anyway, Chris.
I was going to be like, just build websites.com.
Just build websites. That's fair.
ShopTalkShow.com.